The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
What do you do with 10 million completed wall charts? Is it penalty heartbreak or penalty heartache? Should you ever have your picture taken with a referee? Italian managers coming over here and taking our football phrases? Scotland's coastal railways with Julie Walters? The latest transfers that just sound so right? And the clunky dystopian vision of the 2022 World Cup final? Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 82 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me first of all, for one final time, a wall chart update from Dave Walker.
Yeah, not ended the way we wanted to, has it? But I mean, I don't know if you saw yesterday that I did make the rash decision that on travelling to watch the game at my mate's that I was going to frame the wall chart. if we'd have won, I was going to buy a frame and get it up permanently on the wall.
I get that
forever.
Posterity.
And I know previously I said I'd keep it up for a week after the tournament. I've reflected on that decision, and now I realise how ridiculous that was. It will be going down later this evening.
Oh, so it's an element of glory hunting there about it.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, I think you would have left it up. You would have left it up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fine.
When you say you were going to get it framed, how far along did you get with that? I mean, had you started to make initial inquiries, or is more just note to self, do get this framed if England win?
I haven't commissioned anyone to
sure.
to make
you're, the frame. You're not, you weren't like frantically cancelling at 11 o'clock last night.
No.
There was footage of the framer in action, just as England were holding on to the 1-0 lead, and his services will no longer be required.
Change the engravement on the back at the last minute as the penalty was saved.
Yeah, we did get an engraver shot, actually, towards the end of the final. But anyway, alongside you for this one, Charlie Eccleshare. Charlie, I did it. I did it.
You did what?
I went the whole tournament without watching Crouchy's year-late Euros.
I think I did that as well.
I'm actually convinced it exists. Did you see it?
No, I never saw it. And I do remember, what was the 2010 one? Was that, it was kind of like, you know, to bring fancy football into the modern age. I think it may have been James Corden, and it was similarly
it
panned.
Yeah,
I think it was sort of Corden pre-US.
He's definitely done one.
Yeah, yeah, I think it feels like a bit of a cursed slot, that.
It is.
I haven't heard anything about it.
I mean, neither have I, which probably is a marker of it, of how well it's landed. I've sort of seen the trailers. I've seen a bit of stuff online, and it's easy for us to stick the boot in. Look, they're doing
honest
their best
work.
It is a hide into nothing, because football fans, you know, maybe like of our sort of type, and are just not going to be interested in it. But they're sort of going for people that don't. You know, if you're not a football fan, you're not bothered either. Who are they going for? I don't know who the audience is that would ever watch that. But I mean, obviously, there must be some people. But
well, I suppose Crouchy does now transcend football. Like, people who don't like football will be aware of him and happy.
People that listen to his podcast, I guess, is the answer to this question. And evidently, there are a lot of those people, so fair play. More than listen to this.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, not that we're bitter about that.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, with the ITV, who suddenly didn't announce their viewing figures the morning after, but we'll get to that. Well, here we are. I mean, people listening to this will presumably be the morning after, the night after, the night before. There's no real need for us to dwell on any of this. It's not really our job. But Charlie, I do want to start talking about penalties. I think we all thoroughly enjoyed Harry Maguire's penalty. The moment of the shootout where we genuinely would be forgiven for thinking it was all going to go our way. It was the perfect penalty, wasn't it?
Well, it was just the most Maguire-y penalty you could possibly imagine. I mean, it was the platonic ideal of Maguire. It was just amazing. Like it was everything I could have wanted and more. Just like,
but it wasn't brutal, though.
But it was so no nonsense, though, the way he just absolutely leathered it. It felt quite economical. Absolutely loved it. And it did make me, at the risk of sounding like a dinosaur, but when it was then followed by Rashford doing that run up, you did kind of think, maybe there is something to be said.
Penalty gammon, doesn't it?
I know, exactly. I'm aware that this is kind of awful, but in a way, do just put your foot through it. You know, you hold the power in that situation. And I think Kane showed as well, you know, he just put it in the corner. But anyway, yes, let's focus on the positives. It was wonderful.
I know what you mean, Adam, when you say it wasn't brutal, though, because
there was an elegance to it.
There was, yeah. Obviously, he did smash it top corner, and but the reverse angle, the amazing shot where it knocks the camera off the blimp, but as you look at the way that the foot strikes the ball, it's not just a pure head down, laces through, and this will just sort of hope for the best. It was like it sort of feathered it right into the top corner. Like,
well, he'd been practicing it about half an hour before, where he'd been pinging passes into row K for absolutely no reason whatsoever, under no pressure.
That camera breaking as well. That my brother made the point that could be the next like Nobby Dancing or one of them. That could make it into the next Three Lions. But obviously now it's tainted.
Somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
The camera thing about the camera break. Is, yeah, I mean, the thing about the camera breaking is always good to see that happen. But there was something about the way that the camera shot went to static that almost felt like it was like pretend. I don't know. It's like there was something about the camera sort of suddenly going to static, which made me just think that it was done for like a pro TV program or something.
Someone pressed the button.
Too perfect. Yeah, maybe there's someone somewhere with the static effect button, and the camera wasn't really broken. But yeah, I think we can all agree. Perfect penalty. But Dave, more importantly, we are having to revisit the way we talk about England's penalty experiences. And what I want to ask you is it England's penalty shootout heartbreak or England's penalty shootout heartache? Which is it? I have a theory, but I'll let you have a first go. It's important. We hear about this all the time, to the point where I'm actually really knackered reading about it.
It's a great question. I'm trying to imagine. Imagine that, you know, the back pages of the papers or the first line of the news. Heartache, heartbreak, penalty.
People are getting quite lazy.
Heartache.
I think they're just throwing words in. And I feel like there should be some sort of rule.
I feel like I'm about to take a penalty. I feel under pressure here. But heartbreak? Is it break?
Well, my theory is that each individual penalty shootout, Charlie, is the heartbreak. But overall, the ongoing theme is heartache, because that's a lingering thing, isn't it?
Right,
So the individual shootouts, failures are heartbreaks.
But England's heartache continues in penalty shootouts. Heartbreak is very FA Cup third round, when a team suffers late heartbreak that was on the verge of getting a replay or maybe even of winning a tie. I think that to me is more
heartbreak. The kind of script-defying favourites break the hearts of...
Exactly, their heart, yeah.
I think you can make a very strong case for this being the big... You know, not just because of the final. Obviously, it's the final. We've never lost a penalty shootout, a final on a penalty shootout before, so that goes without saying. But, I mean, just in terms of the players involved, the absolute shit show that we've seen in the preceding 24 hours of how the reaction from some Neanderthals to them and the sort of positive rallying around of these players, it is the more of a heartbreaking situation than we've ever experienced. We've all seen players crying into their other's arms at the end of games, but compare this to Stuart Pearce and Waddle in the 90s, to Southgate in 96, it's a completely different emotional layer to it. I mean, rightly so. But and also fact that Bukayo Saka especially is just an adorable young man, and you really do feel like it. That was immediately it was, you know, normally when you go out it's fuck, we're out, but it straight away I was like, oh, Saka.
It moved beyond football really quickly, I think it's fair to say, and obviously not for good reasons.
No, that's made me think, Dave, when you said we're out, I was thinking that today, we've never really had a bit in a final. It's like, can you be knocked out of a tournament at final stage? Have we been over that before?
I mean, in a wall chart sense, yes, because you're not on the final slot.
Yeah.
You have to write, do you have to write the winners in?
Oh, not on my one, no.
Oh. Because you're not out. Okay. I mean, like, everyone's... Italy, they're not out, but their tournament's done. It's a weird one. You know, you're not like...
It's a knockout format, but I would agree that you have reached the final destination and you are both there. There's nowhere else to go.
Yeah. It's not like you're exiting a tournament prematurely, in a way.
We're not in the tournament, though, are we?
No, but nor Italy.
No. No, and we didn't crash out. That's the good thing.
Thank God we didn't crash out, yeah.
Schrodinger's tournament. But it wasn't all about heartbreak at Wembley, Dave, despite the awful scenes. A young fan bumped into referee Michael Oliver at the game and had his photo taken. Tweeted it with the caption, "Met the best ref in Europe, probably the highlight of my otherwise dreadful day." Now, Dave, I put it to you that if you bumped into referee Michael Oliver or any of the higher profile Premier League referees, you would consider having your photo taken with them. That's the level we've got to.
No, I don't think I would. I once bumped into Kevin Friend on a train.
such a name dropper.
I didn't ask for a photo there. He was the quiet coach, so it would have worked.
So he left his car with a personalised number plate at home that day, didn't he? Oh, interesting. Oh, sad to see. Charlie, where do you stand on having your photo taken with referees? I mean, it feels like, I mean, we can judge it from a distance like this with hindsight, you know, but it's a split-second decision. Like, you know, you're never going to get this chance again.
I think it's more, though, how old is this guy who has the photo taken?
I'm saying late teens.
Is he an aspiring ref?
He might be.
I'm imagining more, like, what would my sort of 11, 12-year-old self do if I'd seen Uriah Rennie or someone? I think I probably would have been quite excited by just seeing someone famous. I think now I'd let it slide. I was just thinking, what would I say to that person? I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm a huge fan of your work.
Yeah,
like, it's just I know who you are.
I don't know what the conversation would
be. Yeah, I don't really know. Unless this kid...
What are you doing?
Yeah, here? Maybe this kid, is an aspiring ref or is passionate about officiating. But I don't really know what my way in would be.
Was Michael Oliver flanked by his two assistants when the picture was taken?
I presume he can only shake hands one way, which is the, you know, extremely macho handshake. Hopefully for the very last time for one summer, Dave, politicians and football mixing. Here's ex-Lib Dem supremo Joe Swinson in the aftermath of Sunday night suggesting alternatives to penalty shootouts for deciding tied matches. She has a hierarchy of tiebreakers, you'll be pleased to know. First one is average score per minute played.
What?
And then fewest bookings.
I mean...
Is that in the tournament as a whole?
No, in an individual match.
No one knows. No one cares. Fuck off. I mean, come on. Not now, Joe.
What she's doing is literally, in Euro 96, my primary school class the morning after were tasked with coming up with alternatives that would have spared Gareth Southgate in primary school. So, I mean, Joe Swinson, you know, is 25 years late and doing something that's the exercise for 8-year-olds.
What did you come up with?
I think glad you asked, the front runners were things like each team has to lose a player after every 5 minutes. So you're down to like 6-7 aside, by which time you think it'll be easier to score.
It's comical.
I mean, it would have been hilarious and also probably not fair on the players to flog them in that way. I mean, imagine them having to play the final, having played 7-a-side 3 days earlier.
You'd be bringing on your Adama Traore sort of trump card in the...
It would be amazing to watch,
15th
to be fair.
Minute or something.
And then, yeah, I think I things like, oh, I mean, probably stuff like that, yeah. Well, I think someone suggested like whoever had the most corners should go through or something ridiculous like that. But, I mean, Joe Swinson hasn't really moved it forward.
The average score per minute played seems... You know, relatively logical. I mean, in terms of the spirit of the game. But what I'm concerned about...
I don't even understand that one. What does she mean?
That must mean throughout the tournament, surely, whoever's been
average
the highest
score per minute.
I actually don't know. Because obviously, I've kind of just sort of stared at it and just assumed I knew.
If a game's drawn, then it can't be for that game because it would be the same.
The implication I'm getting is that it's kind of who was in the lead for longer.
Right,
kind of what I'm guessing. So England's led
we would
for longer,
have won.
Therefore deserved the game more. Which, of course, you know, fundamentally misunderstands the point of football. But what most bothers me, and it kind of flew under the radar when I first looked at this, is the idea that first criteria could ever be dead level. So you're going to need a second one, and that's fewest bookings. Just fewest bookings. That's not it. But, I mean, aside from anything else, Charlie, it's never a good time to be suggesting penalty shootout reforms just after you've lost a penalty shootout. That's never a good look.
Yeah. You want to do that from a position of strength, don't you? to show how magnanimous you are.
Yeah, do it in other random year where these things aren't happening. That's when you get taken seriously.
Imagine Joe Swinson just came out with that, yeah, in a non-Euro.
Maybe she
year.
Planned it for 2021. I don't know. She, well, I've got to get it out now.
She'd had the scheduled tweet and just not thinking, oh, fuck, I forgot the Euro's rescheduled by you.
The idea of it, I really wish she'd scheduled that tweet. And it just happened to be the case. You just don't know. This, Dave, is via early football cliches adopter Mark Cox. He noted the translation, the live translation of Roberto Mancini's post-game interview includes a rather unexpected phrase.
Ecstasy for Italy and Roberto Mancini as they claim their second European championship.
I'm very happy because the team played well and we deserved the victory. Sure, that goal early doors did cause us a few issues in the first 15 minutes.
Early doors. That's fantastic.
A nice hangover from his days, I suppose, as Manchester City manager or Leicester City player, indeed.
Mm.
That's an assumption. Is it just a very well-used phrase in Italian?
I'd like to know that. I'd like to get Horncastle to reverse translate that to see if that's the translator taking liberties or if that is a good, accurate translation of what he said.
Well, this isn't unprecedented because it reminded me, Charlie, of Andrea Pirlo's book, which I've never read, but you see quotes from it floating around all the time. And every quote I see, I just think to myself, that doesn't sound like what I would expect Andrea Pirlo to talk like. It's lots of what I would arrogantly consider to be colloquial English phrases or predominantly English phrases that are kind of thrown in. And I just think, I just can't imagine that phrase would exist like that in another language, even allowing for a little bit of creative freedom in the translation. And there are probably some book translators out there screaming at this podcast saying, no, that's not how it works. We are allowed to do that. But still.
Yeah, I imagine there was quite a lot of license in that Pirlo book.
But yeah, early doors in Italian. I'm really glad that they have that. Or the presumption is that they have that anyway. Dave, I'm amazed actually that we didn't touch on this next thing in our smash hit fate tempting episode What If England Win Euro 2020 as a kind of alternative timeline, because I can confirm that a fan has got a premature tattoo and now looks very silly, but not silly enough to not be interviewed on Sky Sports News.
Oh, I was absolutely gutted. Everyone were though, it was silent. Awful.
And then you thought about the tattoo.
And then I got reminded about the tattoo, yeah.
So what did you think then?
It's just one of them things, isn't it? It's done.
So no suggestion that you might have it taken off?
No, I'm not having it taken off. A lot of people have said you should get it covered up, but no, I might just change the date. And
put, you could change the date in a couple of years,
couldn't
you?
Put Euro 2024 on there.
Or maybe just include maybe semi-final and not...
Yeah, you can put semi-final down the side so it says England semi-final winners.
Is it one of those things, though? Just one of those things?
It is what it is, isn't it?
I thought this was going to be you, Dave, with your prematurely ordering the framed wall chart. I thought you were going to have that and then have to be interviewed on Sky Sports, kind of explaining that you'd commissioned this hugely expensive wall chart. Framing.
I spent all of Sunday in a tattoo parlor getting the wall chart tattooed onto my back.
Lewis Holden is this guy's name. He seems to have taken it very well, Charlie.
Yeah,
taken it in very good humour. As they always seem to, don't they? They always seem to take it good humour. You never see a really angry guy about his tattoo, do you?
Yeah, and I think I like the fact that he's thinking: is there a way that this still could come good? And if we were to win Euro 2024, then quite a small alteration and. Who's laughing then?
Exactly. I didn't want to get too judgmental here at all because he just really doesn't seem to care. So fair enough. It was almost like he planned it in advance. So next up, Dave, a nice mini running theme on this podcast during the Euros. The all-important numbers came out on Monday afternoon, the viewing figures for the final itself. I can reveal that a TV audience of 30.95 million watched the tense closing minutes of the Euro 2020 final overnight figures show. The figures include those watching on ITV Plus One.
Plus One?
Yeah, they should be on a database, all right. Who is doing that? Who is watching the Euro 2020 final on ITV Plus One?
It's, you know, admirable in a way. If I was in the situation for whatever reason where I had, that was what I had to do, that was the only thing available to me.
You were trapped and that was the channel that it was on. and you had to wait an hour for it to start.
I wouldn't be able to resist looking at my phone. I just wouldn't. I'd have to lock it away in a safe. But also, you'd hear, like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe that. I mean, you might live where in a big detached house where you can't hear anyone. Maybe, I suppose. But like, if you live in any densely populated area, well, you're gonna hear stuff happening, aren't you?
Presumably, those people are watching it a second time. They're not watching it. I mean, aren't they people kind of reliving it a bit on?
I suppose that counts.
I mean, it's still, they're still being credited. I can't believe there are many people.
No, that wouldn't work because the thing's too long. So it's not like an hour-long program that you can go back and watch again at the end because you'd have to start.
No, but
plus one would be the start of the second half. So you'd have to watch the first half immediately again.
The game finishes. You watch the kind of hour after, from the moment of the penalty finish it or penalty shootout starting, all the post-match, and let's say you're an Italian fan, you're like, oh, I've exhausted all the analysis, I want to relive that. Great, I can go on to Plus One and watch the penalty shootout.
Okay,
you watch the end again. Yeah,
not the whole thing.
No. Well, that would be weird. But that, because it's only the closing minutes, isn't it? That 30.95 million who watched. So yeah, you can catch the end.
Meanwhile, a surprisingly healthy 556,000 viewers on ITV2 for Love Island, while Channel 4 attracted 404,000 viewers, Charlie, for Scotland's Coastal Railways with Julie Walters, and that was a repeat.
That's incredible. Half a million people were watching that over the Euros final.
Yeah. I mean, you tune into the football match out of curiosity to see what's going on, what the fuss is all about.
Are they just really spiteful Scottish football fans? I'm just going to watch this. At least it's got something to do with Scotland.
Yeah.
We'll always have our Coastal Railways, you fuckers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, shove it at them. But speaking of which, 77,000 people watched Naked Attraction on E4 during extra time and penalties. Wow.
Yeah, see, I think those numbers are more shocked. Like, 30.95 million doesn't really mean anything to me. 404,000 watching Coastal Railways and 77,000 watching Naked Attraction on E4.
You picture that.
Yeah,
you picture
that's
that more.
Well, it's not far off being the amount of people that were inside Wembley.
Exactly.
You know, watching Naked
That's
Attraction.
True. I mean, you could say that 70,000 people went to Wembley to watch England versus Italy. Oh, that's niche.
Yeah. I mean, and also, you basically, if you were looking in the right places before the game, you would have had the same experience as watching Naked Attraction.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yes. On a nice note to leave the Euros on, I think, for this podcast, because I want to talk domestic matters now. Charlie, while this has all been going on, some transfers that have happened that just sound so right. I offer you French left-back Romain Perrault. Do you know where he's gone? French left-back Romain Perrault.
West Ham?
Southampton.
He's gone to Southampton. Yeah. Okay.
How Southampton does he sound?
They've lost Bertrand, haven't they? So
I'll offer you another one. Nathan Collins from Stoke to Burnley. I mean, that's an all-round...
That's
tidy
nice.
Transfer.
Yeah, don't even know who that is, but it sounds good.
It's very rare that a player immediately jumps out as being a good servant for his new club straight away. You just know this is going to be long-serving Nathan Collins for Burnley. So on a similar note, Dave, Josh King to Watford. Was he always destined for Watford?
Well, yeah, producer AD texted this to us in our WhatsApp group the other day when it happened. It was like, what a Watford signing that is. And obviously my perspective is different. I didn't feel like it was, really.
No, fair enough. It's never it's always in the eye of the external beholder, I think. You never feel it when it's your club.
Josh King as a backup. Did this happen or did I imagine it? Josh King as a backup for Everton in the second half of last season.
Yeah.
Because that felt right. I mean, he felt like the heir to Cenk Tosun in that role. In the kind of non-scoring Everton striker sub role.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly unimaginative window, Charlie. Wolves have signed 21-year-old Portuguese winger Francisco Trincão from Barcelona, who, on a slight tangent, I've decided we can now call cash-strapped Barcelona.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're well into that.
What state are their finances in?
Parlous.
Yes, thank you. Parlous is the only word we're allowed to use.
Sorry, Les, I can't come out tonight. My finances are parlous.
Go through a bit of a hard time.
That would be really, really good. We haven't done this for a while, Charlie, which is ripping apart some fictional football for its complete lack of dedication to the real thing. This is from...
Oh, God. Sorry, I forgot something on that note. You're like this particularly, Dave. Sorry to interrupt, Adam. But on that theme, I was the book I was reading the other day, it was talking about the author's a friend of hers whose son's really into football. He's a big fan of Watford City.
Oh,
I thought, what the fuck is Watford City? And I thought, this book that must have been proofread within an inch of its life, it's always the football stuff that just gets overlooked. Like, whoever was proofreading that must have been like, nah, sort of sounds believable. What's Watford City?
That reminds me of Wolves United from Fever Pitch.
Is that?
When she sort of... It's when she sneerily says, oh, Wolves United or something like that, show she knows absolutely nothing about football.
Watford City
is very much not a city, is it?
Yeah. Not a city, it's a town. Very close to St Albans, which is a small city. But
what if they were called Watford Town? Just changes the whole complexion of a football club, doesn't it?
Yeah. Watford Town. Yeah, doesn't work.
No, you know, you're right to pick up on it. Right to pick up on it. But on a rather grander scale, this is a military science fiction thriller on Amazon, The Tomorrow War. I'm not sure I've got the emphasis right. I'd say it's probably the Tomorrow War. Anyway, approximately 685 people have sent me this clip so far in the last couple of weeks. What I think is one of the opening scenes, Charlie, is set in the 2022 World Cup final in Qatar. And the game is between Brazil and an unidentified, some sort of approximated nation who look uncomfortably like Scotland. And while all this is all going on, 3-3 with a few minutes left, great game. Suddenly, some soldiers from the year 2051 arrive to warn that humanity is on the brink of extinction due to a war with alien invaders. I'll show you both this clip and we'll get a feel of it. I think enough people have seen it now for this to work in a podcast medium.
He's heading down that pitch. He's alone, only one defender behind.
That wouldn't happen. This wouldn't happen.
And this viewing setup is bizarre.
Oh yeah, the camera. I haven't even thought about that.
God, they do look like Scotland, don't they?
Yeah.
It's a repeat of the opening match of the France 98 World Cup.
It's weird. I mean, this guy Peralta, the Brazilian star striker, looks like a footballer from the front, but doesn't look like a footballer from the back. I'm not sure. They all just look very out of shape.
Bit of a Gabriel Jesus vibe from the front.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are loads of people coming out of the sky. Soldiers, armed soldiers with balaclavas coming out of the sky.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we're not too worried about the realism.
No, I was going to say.
Up until that point, I mean, it was just this kind of one-man counterattack at jogging pace, which really irritated me, because that's not difficult. I mean, Demba Ba against Manchester United in the Europa League last season showed that these one-man counterattacks can happen out of nowhere, but not at jogging pace. That's not hard to get right, is it, Charlie?
This is, again, Watford City made me think of the need for the football consultant that we've talked about so often, and again here in that bizarre counterattack. Also, 3-3, is it? Did you say it was 3-3?
With a few minutes to go, yeah.
I mean, I guess we don't know the state of the group and things like that, but why would one team be so pushed on?
This is the final.
Oh, it's the final. Okay, well, that's mad, because why would it 3-3 in a final? Would there be a team pushing up to that extent?
I know.
Absolute madness.
Who would you recommend as a football consultant for this? I mean, Coxey wouldn't be a bad shout, would he?
Well, Joe Swinson.
Joe Swinson and assistant Michael Cox, who would be so unforgiving.
Yeah, I think his standards would be too high.
Something I noticed there as well with the counter-attack. Did you see that the closest player to the Brazilian forward running through the middle of the pitch was the referee? The referee was level with the striker.
They've got it all wrong. I mean, I had to freeze frame at one point, Dave, to try and discern who the hell this opposition were. Very Scottish-looking kit. The badge is very nondescript, but one of the players is called Mason. So it suggests
Scotland.
British Isles, doesn't it? And it has to be Scotland.
It's annoying, though, isn't it? This is a multi... I mean, I'm sure this budget for this film is hundreds of millions of pounds. Like, it's Chris Pratt, isn't it? Is in the lead, like a huge star. Just do it right. just make it better.
It is frustrating. It's an ongoing frustration. I mean, there must be a fundamental reason why they're not be able to do this. But
get Keezy in.
Yeah, Keezy would be.
Keezy's broken his silence on whether it was coming home or not. And in his view, it never was. I mean, you know how Keezy is the master of sort of being wise after the event. And
the truth is, it never was.
It never
was, Andy.
Ever.
They contributed nothing.
Not ever. Not happening. Nonsense.
It's here with me in Qatar.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Keezy's very, very detailed breakdown of what he would have had to have done to go back to the UK. He itemised how much it would cost to stay in a hotel, which is you know, again, one of those collisions between Keezyan and Partridgian worlds. I really love to have seen, but yeah, sadly it didn't come to pass. He's gone to Spain instead. I think ending our first post-Euros episode throwing forward to an unrealistic depiction of Qatar 2022 is the best way we could have closed this off. It leaves you perhaps with a little shred of appetite for international football, Charlie. Can you see yourself getting up for the World Cup in 18 months' time?
I can. I was saying that the only thing I can't, that I'm not up for, I don't mind that, you know, watching football in World Cup in November, December will feel weird, but you'll still be watching football. What I'm not looking forward to is in the kind of late October, early November period, there'll have to be the sort of dead pre-World Cup friendlies at a time where normally you've got such great football happening. That I will struggle with.
You know what I'm really concerned about for this tournament? I think we're going to have the potential for a horrible collision between football novelty songs and Christmas songs.
Yeah.
It's going to be three lions with Santa, and
it's going to be marketing. You know,
Bell and Sperling are going to be in Santa costumes, aren't they? Doing Rudolph's golden balls or something. Like, it's going to be golden balls.
Badil and Skinner doing a Christmas themed three lions. I wouldn't rule it out. Despite the fact I cannot hear them explain the origins of three lions one more time. I don't want to hear about it. And we've still got the Olympics this summer, Dave. If you can get your hands on a wall chart for the Olympics, the dream is still alive.
What, for the whole thing? All 33 sports.
Laboriously filling in the archery.
It's a giant thing on my old one side of my house.
That's an incredible idea. Surely there must be a full Olympics wall chart out there somewhere with all the individual rounds and all the repechages.
The heats, the repechages, the pools.
Oh my goodness me.
The cycling.
Full Olympics wall chart.
The swimming wall chart on its own would just be enormous.
God, so all many heats.
Relays so and medals and different classifications. Well, that's what we've got to. And we've still got time. We've still got 10 days. Someone can knock one up, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd really like to see that. You're going to need a much bigger wall, let's put it that way. thanks very much to you, Dave. I hope your wall chart survives a little bit longer. And cheers to you, Charlie Eccleshare. Cheers to you. Yeah, we'll be back with fully domestic matters soon for the new season. And goodbye, Euros. Hello, normal football. And goodbye to everyone. See you later.
The Athletic.